video program and answer questions 1 to 4.
And now, after that old favourite from the Corrs, entitled I Never Loved You Anyway, we have Dr. Claire Greenhill to talk to us today about stress in the workplace. Is it getting worse, Dr. Greenhill?
I'm not sure whether it's getting worse or just that more people are talking about it. Certainly lots more people are complaining about it. I've just completed a study of 5,000 workers from 20 different countries, and I've taken a multicultural approach to the subject.
And what have you found?
That broadly speaking, the causes of stress are similar the world over. For example, Ramon from Mexico City says that society measures people by individual success. But he says increasingly work is organized in teams. This means there's a conflict between personal goals and the need to cooperate with one's colleagues. He finds this an acute source of stress, actually. Then there's Kikuko from Osaka, Japan, who says she's under a lot of stress because the company she's worked for 30 years is in difficulties. She says it's because her bosses made a number of bad decisions, but really what worries her most is that she might lose her job. You know, she's in her 50s, and at that age it's not easy to find another one. She says that she also feels overworked, and well, that's getting her stressed out too. Well, then there's Boris from Odessa in the Ukraine. He puts overwork at the top of his list of stressors. Then there are other factors. Both he and his wife have full-time jobs, so that when they get home, they don't get to relax much either. I guess that's a problem most of us can relate to.
We always hear about computers, email, and cell phones as things which get people tearing their hair out. Is this true?
In many cases, yes. But not as much as you might think. Only 15% of respondents give this as the main cause. Etienne from Quebec, Canada is one, though he also mentions change and the feeling of being a victim of circumstances beyond his control. Other people talk about the amount of work which comes with continual change as being more stressing than new technologies themselves. People feel they lack stability in their working life. But we must remember that in many places it's really lack of new technology that puts people under most pressure. Take Nagwa from Sohag in Egypt, for example. She says that for her the main source of stress was working in noisy, hot, unventilated conditions day in, day out, and with no end in sight. So it seems we can't win either way.
Before the radio program continues, look at questions 5 to 10. Now listen to the next part of the program and answer questions 5 to 10.
So what can we as individuals do to make things easier for ourselves?
Well, I've talked to a number of specialists about this, doctors and psychologists, and here are a few suggestions for reducing stress without you having to change your job. First, vary your diet. Fish, pasta, vegetables, fruit, and so on. Try not to live off sandwiches and fast food. A balanced diet, in other words. Also, we tend to drink too much coffee. Caffeine, the drug in coffee, gets us more nervous. So if you want to feel less stressed, drink less coffee. It's tough at first, but you'll notice the difference within just a few days. Finally, take regular exercise. It's a great way of relaxing, and of course it makes you more healthy, too. For particular causes of stress, there are various things you can do. If your problem is that you think you've got too much work on your plate, what you probably need to do is manage time better. You have to learn to deal with the things which are really vital. Don't waste time on trivialities. There are courses to help you with this. If you are worried about unemployment, make plans so that if it happens, you are ready for it. Do things like set money aside and update your CV so it's attractive to new employers. As for new technologies, do training courses so that you feel at home with them and so that you don't feel frightened of them. So in the end, the best way to deal with stress is for you to take control of your life and not allow yourself to be a victim of circumstances.
Thank you, Dr. Claire Greenhill, on fighting stress. And just when you thought you could relax, here's Dolly Parton working 9 to 5.
Section 2. In this section, you'll hear an introduction about ancient architectures. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 20. Now listen carefully to the tape and answer questions 11 to 20.
The architecture of the ancients often reflects the ideas and beliefs of that time. Some of the ancient structures can give us a glimpse into the minds of the people who built them. Now Professor Francis is going to talk to us about ancient architecture.
No story is more interesting or impressive than the story of architecture, and in particular the activities of human beings in the art of building. Let's have a look at this in some detail. Did you ever visit the pyramids? Look at this picture, please. The pyramids in Egypt are true wonders of the ancient world. Khufu's pyramid is a stunning 138-meter-high mass of 2.3 million stones, each weighing about 2.5 tons. It was built to geometrical perfection over 4,500 years ago, with simple stone and copper tools. It was so far advanced that some have suggested it was designed by aliens. Actually, there is an astronomical significance to the perfect precision of the pyramids. By using two stars that circle the sky polar point, Egyptian astronomers were able to arrange the pyramids due north. This was done because they believed the king's afterlife and the stars were closely related. They believed their pharaoh, that is, their king, had been transformed into another living being, a light in the sky in contrast to the darkness of death. Okay, now let's look at another picture. On this picture is Athens' ancient Parthenon. It is an immense columned temple, built almost entirely of marble. Athens' ancient Parthenon is a perfect model of classic Greek architecture. It was built to honour Athena, the goddess of wisdom. Therefore, it includes the ideals of logic and reason in its design. Built in the 5th century BC, the Parthenon is made up of almost 140 columns. The Greeks associated the columns with the virtues of a human being: strong, orderly, proud, and beautiful. The height and width of the Parthenon are designed with the rational logic of geometry. The upper diameter of each column is a bit narrower than its base. It bulges slightly in the middle and slants inward. This kind of optical illusion makes the columns appear more graceful and thus more beautiful. The Parthenon also symbolizes democracy. Each column supports the entire structure, just as each person contributes to the government. It symbolizes that Athens' government is democratic. Finally, I am going to introduce the Roman Colosseum, a large oval structure for public sports events, entertainment, or assemblies. The Roman Colosseum displays the practical nature and political thinking of Romans. The Colosseum was built in 80 AD, when, throughout its vast empire, Romans' population and wealth were growing. It was necessary for politicians to entertain the people in return for their support. Gladiators would battle wild animals, and even one another, in order to entertain the bloodthirsty crowds. Constructed with tons of marble, the Colosseum stood 48 meters high. It has the capacity to hold up to 50,000 spectators. Spectators sat on the lower three levels, surrounded by towering roofed passageways. On hot days, a cover suspended from the top story provided shade from the sun. Ancient architecture gives us a sense of the different societies that build these amazing monuments. Through it, we can imagine what life was like when those civilizations were flourishing. That is the end of section 2. You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Section 3. You will hear a conversation between a student, Dave, and his tutor about a project that Dave has done about work placements. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 25. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 25.
Good afternoon, Dave. Come on in and take a seat.
Hi, Dr. Green. Thanks.
Well, hang on a minute. I'll just find the first draft of your project paper and we can have a look at it together. Now, yours is the one on work placement, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
So what made you choose that for your project?
Well, I suppose it was because sending students off to various companies for work experience seems to be such a typical part of educational courses these days. I mean, even school kids get to do it. But I felt everyone just kind of assumes it's a good thing. And I guess I wanted to find out if that's the case.
But you don't look at schools or colleges, right? You've stuck to university placement schemes.
Yeah, well, I quickly found that I had to limit my research. Otherwise, the area was just too big. Do you think that was okay?
I think it's very sensible, especially as the objectives might be very different. So how many schemes did you look at?
Well, I sent out about 150 questionnaires altogether. You know, 50 of each to university authorities, students and companies. And I got responses from 15 educational institutions and 30 students in 11 individual companies.
Great. That sounds like a good sample. And who did you send your company questionnaires to?
Well, the idea was to have them done by the students' line managers. But sometimes they were filled in by the human resources manager or even the owner of the company.
Right. I didn't find a full list anywhere. So I think it's very important to provide that, really. You can put it as an appendix at the back.
Right. I've got a record of all the respondents, so that'll be easy. I hope other things were okay. I mean, I've already put such a lot of work into this project, identifying the companies and so on.
Oh, I can tell. I think you've done a good job overall.
You now have some time to look at questions 26 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 26 to 30.
I thought your questionnaires were excellent, and you'd obviously done lots of background reading. But there were a few problems with the introduction. First of all, I think you need to make some slight changes to the organisation of your information there. At present, it's a bit confused.
OK. What did you have in mind?
Well, you write quite a bit about work placement in general, but you never explain what you mean by the term.
So you think I should give a definition?
Exactly. And the introduction is the place to do it. And then, look, you start talking about what's been written on the topic, but it's all a bit mixed up with your own project.
So, do you think it would be better to have two sections there, like a survey of the literature as the introduction, and then a separate section on the aims of my research?
I do. You can include your methods for collecting data in the second section too. It would be much clearer for your reader. You know, establish the background first, then how your work relates to it. It would flow quite nicely then.
Yes, I see what you mean.
Anyway, moving on. I like the way you've grouped your findings into three main topic areas.
Well, it became very obvious from the questionnaires that the preparation stage was really important for the whole scheme to work. So I had to look at that first. And I found a huge variation between the different institutions, as you saw.
I was wondering if you could give a summary at the end of this stage of what you consider to be the best practice you found. I think that would be very helpful.
Right, I'll just make a note of that. What did you think of my second set of findings on key skills development? For me, this is the core of my whole project, really.
And you've handled it very well. I wouldn't want you to make any changes. You've already got a nice final focus on good practice there.
Thanks.
Right. Now, I think the last part, which deals with the reasons why students don't learn...
What, the constraints on learning chapter?
Yes, that's the one. I think you need to refer to the evidence from your research a bit more closely here. You know, maybe you could illustrate it with quotations from the questionnaires, or even use any extracts from a student diary if you can, and refer back to what you've written about good practice.
That is the end of section 3. You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Section 4. In this section, you'll hear a lecture on sports injuries. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now listen to the lecture carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
Morning, everyone, and welcome to our regular lecture on health issues. This series of lectures is organised by the Students' Union. It's a great pleasure for me to welcome Mr. David Greenbaum, a physician in sports medicine, to come along and talk to us today.
Thank you. You may doubt what good sports medicine can do to non-athletes like you, college students. According to public assumptions, sports medicine doctors deal only with sporting injuries. But actually, we treat general joint problems experienced by average people more than treating people who hurt themselves by playing sports. So, whether you're an athlete or not, a sports medicine physician can help you start off every day on the right foot. If you are a college athlete or a sporty person, You must stay at the top of your game. But how do you maintain best physical fitness? You should be under the watchful eye of your sports team physician. Sports medicine doctors offer total care treatment, such as customized workouts, immediate care of injuries, and surgery when needed. A sports medicine doctor's training falls within the speciality of orthopedic surgery. As such, it focuses on the cartilage, ligaments, and muscles involved in your body's movement. So, how do injuries happen? Most of us take for granted the intricate interactions of our bones, muscles, and ligaments until they are damaged. When injured, these tissues can degenerate, causing your joints to ache and feel stiff. Even ordinary daily movements such as walking and bending may cause a sports injury through overuse. Furthermore, the normal wear and tear on your body's tissue may become more taxing as you age. To prevent such problems, especially as you begin a fitness exercise, your sports medicine doctor offers total care. This includes x-rays to identify potential trouble spots. Afterwards, he helps you set an exercise routine that fits your body's present condition. Do you know your joints? Your body's most complex structural feature is its joints. Your joints allow you to grasp, twist, sit, and even feed yourself. Repetitive motions, however, may lead to chronic overuse of the soft tissue connecting bones at the joints. This overuse can result in injuries such as tennis elbow or even carpal tunnel syndrome. A more severe type of injury occurs when you lose your balance, thereby putting a joint under abnormal stress. Worse still, you could suffer a bone fracture. When a traumatic injury happens, effective medical care is crucial. Improper treatment of any joint injury can cause permanent loss of flexibility and reoccurring joint pain. As quickly as possible, the doctor applies ice packs to your injury. Ice deters swelling and inflammation, so you feel less pain. After keeping it iced for the first 48 hours after injury, the doctor begins therapeutic exercise of your wounded joint. Recently, a new treatment for degenerating joints has been developed, which is a product called Orthokin. The treatment involves combining healing proteins with a sample of the patient's own blood. The injured joint then receives an injection of the mixture. This new technology stimulates our own white blood cells to produce large quantities of protective protein. Our cells make this protein naturally, but not in sufficient amounts to protect the damaged cartilage in our joints. It also has the advantage of convenience and lack of side effects. Here are some suggestions on how to prevent sports injuries. Use appropriate protective equipment. Maintain proper lighting in the training area. Have adequate rest. Avoid alcohol and drugs in order to prevent injuries. Follow a regular fitness training program to improve overall coordination and endurance. Better endurance will absorb pressure and prevent injury. Perform adequate warm-up exercises before training or performance. Avoid performing sports or work when you are sick. Most injuries happen when one is fatigued. Avoid treatment by dubious health practitioners. Use of inappropriate massage, adjustment, and homemade medicine, often with steroids or other non-tested drugs, can cause more damage to the injury. That is the end of section 4.